So Jack texted in our group chat, producer Jack, and said, "Hey guys, I really think you should see Wicked this weekend." And this guy, I swear to God, I'm gonna fucking strangle him for this. This is like the way I texted later and said, "Hey Jack, you gotta come see this, man. They just followed the yellow brick road to Boston and found Ben Affleck." And honestly, I think that would have been a better movie for me. But Ty, I want you to go through your theater experience first because I had a pretty good one.
Okay, so it's not on my ticket, but I have to tell this story. My mom and I went, and she had plans later in the night. The only theater that showed an optimal time for her was NCG. Like, ah, shit, we're going to NCG Ghost Town for the biggest movie out right now. We pull up at 7:30. The entire theater was, the parking lot was packed. Like, had a tough time finding a parking spot at NCG. That's crazy. I can't remember the last time that happened. But roll in, the lines for the concessions are packed. The line to get your popcorn filled up, like you got to sit and wait for a second. It's like, holy shit, people showed up for this. Get to our theater. It's theater one, packed house, like, all the theater kids showing up for Wicked. It was really cool. Theater's black at 7:30 when the movie's supposed to start. Like, does someone go say something? The manager comes in. Hey, we couldn't get the trailers going, so we're just gonna start the movie. You go use the bathroom if you need to, but we're gonna start in like 2 minutes. So super fitting from NCG. Just everything goes wrong there now. But my ticket reads, oh man. As someone that hasn't seen the musical and isn't that into musical movies, it's hard to say this was a blast. However, between some of the awesome set pieces, great music, and great performances, it'd be impossible not to give it a high movie grade. Blast grade B minus, movie grade A. I think there's a lot here to like from a movie perspective. I liked a lot of the music. I respect a lot of the production and set design. Thought it was pretty nifty. And I think the third act is about as fastball as it gets. I had a good time, not great time, only because I'm not a fan of Wicked, like an established fan, and I'm not a musical guy or like an established musical guy, but enough here to keep me entertained for the most part.
All right, you ready for mine?
Hold on. Double D plus.
Lower.
Mr. No Fun.
So, Ty, I walked into the movie theater, and AMC Classic 14 in Normal is about the same level as NCG, and everything always goes wrong. There were showings for Wicked every 30 minutes, going all the way to 10:30. I walked in at 9:59 p.m. What showing do you think they sold me a ticket
Red one.
to? I wish. No, 9:30. So I walked into the theater, and I don't think I missed that much because this place shows an absurd amount of trailers. So I walked in when she was like going to leave, when Galindo was going to leave, and then came back down and like popped her bubble and was like, "Oh, I guess I'll keep telling the story." And I sat there for an hour and 20 minutes. And then I did this thing that I've only done once in my life before this, and I walked out.
Oh my gosh. With Morgan with you?
Morgan was not with me. If she was there, I would have stayed, but she was actually part of the decision-making process. I was like, "Man, I had a shitty week of work. Am I really going to sit here for another hour and 15 minutes? Sorry, hour 25. Or should I just go home and spend some fucking time with my girlfriend?" And I decided I had seen enough of Wicked to make this pod. And so I left the theater. And I think that was the right decision. And part of the reason is that this is Wicked Part One. And Ty, the runtime of this movie is 2 hours and 40 minutes. Do you know what the runtime is of the entire Broadway musical?
2 hours and 45 minutes.
Correct. And the director of this movie said that there was way too much in the original to really do justice in one movie. My guy, that just means you're a bad writer.
the greatest musical like of the last like 20 years. Basically, you have the template but can't get it down to one part.
I can't believe that. It's a 2 hour 45 minute musical. How does it turn into a 5 hour movie? That is fucking insane to me. And like, something I was taught a lot in my screenwriting class is about word economy and about how to get the plot moving as quickly as possible and making sure you're not just including unnecessary things. And honestly, I wasn't even seeing a lot of that, but there has to be a way to get it to a 2 hour 45 minute movie if the play is 2 hours and 45 minutes. I refuse to believe that there's no way they could have done that.
Well, either way, I'm picturing the meme of the guy turning away after digging away looking for diamonds, and just before he gets through the crack, there's the pile of diamonds. The third act, there is a lot to like. So did you leave before they get to Emerald City?
I left and laughed during the really weird club dance scene.
Oh my gosh, you didn't like the club dance scene? So
are
I felt like
Glinda and Elphaba like in a relationship?
No, they're just friends.
Oh, I fully thought they were in love. I completely thought they were in love watching this movie.
No, there's a love triangle that evolves, but I'm guessing we had similar feelings throughout the movie. I was dead tired seeing this one, and someone that's not into musicals, hasn't seen Wicked, it was going to be a tall task to get me invested, but there were a couple scenes that like I sat up on the edge of my seat, felt the energy from the crowd, and got locked in. One of them is the split screen musical portion where they're each on their beds in their like shared dorm room. Felt locked in there. When the prince gets introduced and he gets his like solo, I was convinced you were going to introduce me as the prince on the pod, but you probably walked out at that part. And then everything after they get to Emerald City is pretty damn good. I understand the hype for this stuff. Like, even without even being a Wicked guy, did you at least like the production value here? Like, no CGI, to my knowledge.
The animals weren't all CGI. They looked all CGI to me.
Of course, the goat, but the set pieces are, there's no, it doesn't look like any green screen until we get like the wide shot of Emerald City. But the set pieces are pretty damn good.
Yeah, and I mean, who knows? Maybe they just reused stuff from the musicals there, or had people from the musical come on and work on that. Like, that is a telltale sign of a good musical. But I don't know. The concept of Wicked itself is interesting to me because it's a backstory to a dream, which is so funny to think about. Like, Oz as a whole, like in its originality, is just Dorothy's dream. So seeing the backstory to this, like, it's so wild to me, and I think that's fun.
All right, question for you. Did you actually go see this movie?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. I think it would have been funnier if you didn't, but I couldn't get a read. So
I wanted to stay home. I really did. But luckily, AMC Classic 14, since it sucks so bad, the tickets are only $7 on a weekend night. And I forced myself to go. I did watch the first hour and 20 minutes. I walked out at the weird dancing.
Interesting. So I felt like that weird dancing you're talking about was one of those moments for me where I understood or like got locked in a little bit, where they finally become buddies, Glinda and Elphaba. I don't even know where to start with you. Like, I don't know where to talk.
I mean, I read the Wikipedia summary of the rest of the movie so that I'd be prepped for this. So, and I had Morgan catch me up. So I feel comfortable talking about the rest if you have like some groundbreaking scene that you wanted to talk about.
Well, since this is a two-parter, we don't get the full Wicked story like you do in the musical. And there is a part that I caught on to the first 5 minutes of the movie, when we're getting Elphaba's backstory. Her mom has an affair and then has a kid with the person she had an affair with. Within 5 minutes, I was like, that's Oz. Guaranteed. It doesn't come up the rest of the movie, but I guarantee in part two, that it will be this big reveal that Oz is Elphaba's dad.
Interesting. Yeah, I have no background on the actual thing either. My background on this is, I think the last Wizard of Oz content I watched actually was Oz the Great and Powerful, starring James Franco.
Did you like that one?
I remember seeing it in theaters. That's the last time I saw it. And I thought it was aggressively okay.
I thought it was fine. Is that Sam Raimi? I feel like there's a notable director behind it.
It might be. I'm not positive, though. Hmm.
What? How'd you feel about Ariana Grande?
I can't stand her voice. She's like Awkwafina for me, where just like everything she says, I can't take... The itch in my brain or something. I don't know. I can't stand their voices. And it actually made me wonder, is Wicked any different if Awkwafina is the lead?
Yes, it is. I think you need a great artist to play the role of Galinda for those singing pieces. I don't think she's miscast. Per my Wicked fans of the play, she did a really good job as Galinda, but I'm not understanding the hype surrounding Grande in this project. Like, I feel like she is completely outclassed by Cynthia Erivo here.
That is what I felt for the first however long I saw. Cynthia Erivo, it was very good in this movie as a performer. I know like nothing about music, so I don't want to comment on any of the singing stuff because I feel underqualified there. But I thought her like acting scenes during just the dialogue were pretty good.
I couldn't agree more. And did you have a favorite song before you left? Anything that you were vibing with?
The goat sings for a little bit. That was fun. I liked him. He was a cool guy.
I felt bad for Professor Goat. Did you get that far where he gets kicked out of the school?
I did not get that far. The last I saw of Professor Goat was at like the secret meeting, but I kind of figured that would happen.
Yeah, he loses his voice, goes Animal Farm style. How'd you feel about the presentation of themes? I feel like it hits on some heavy themes, but at a PG level.
It does. It felt like they had something to say, and this is a musical that I think is made for like probably 10 to 15 year olds, I would say. Is that like fair or no?
I have no gauge on the musical side of it, but the movie's PG, so okay, that's the audience we're shooting for.
Yeah, I think that's fair then. So if their target audience is like 10 to 15, I think it introduces some interesting themes about like the major one I'm seeing here is racism, and I both from the animal's perspective and from Elphaba's perspective, I feel like it was pretty surface level though, and did it in a way that I thought was a little bit ridiculous. Like for every single person, every single time to be like completely freaking the fuck out that she was green, I think is a little bit ridiculous.
So at first I was kind of getting irritated with the same thing. It felt pretty surface level, too on the nose, if you will. But I kept forgetting it's a PG movie, a movie mm-hmm. that I felt like was pretty surface level. I mean, when I go back and revisit Remember the Titans, it's pretty surface level on the themes they're diving into, but it's a PG movie. Like, you're trying to teach and convey these themes and messages to a younger audience. It's not like Green Book where it's so surface level for an older audience and it's disgusting. I really can't stand Green Book, man. I can't believe that won an Oscar.
Yeah, that's pretty awful. Yeah. That and Coda. Coda was bad too.
I never saw Coda.
Yeah, I guess I get what you're saying. So maybe we're just out of the age range. Like, if we were introduced to Wicked at a younger age, do you think that it hits a little better for us?
Maybe. I don't know, because... Yeah. If you've seen the musical, I think you're going to like this movie. Because I knew going in, I'm not a Wicked fan, but I can at least acknowledge, like, just gut feel, it seems like they're honoring the musical. Like, they're hitting all the beats. They want to make sure that every Wicked fan is satisfied. They made it for the fans, and for that, it's hard for me to be upset.
Yeah. I'm grimacing because I think if they made it for the fans, it would have been one part. That's what I'm gonna say. I think the fact that this was split into two parts, I don't think that the writing can be that lazy. And it has to just be like, okay, well, why release one movie when we can release two and make double the money?
Yeah, I get that. But then what about like Deathly Hallows or Goblet of Fire? Like, I feel like now that I'm a Harry Potter guy.
Those are like 700-page books, though. I mean, your source material is a lot vaster there. And even there, I think that those movies could have been shorter. I think Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, I think, is one of the biggest waste of time movies I've ever seen in my life. I think that 1 and 2 could absolutely be combined. I feel the same way about Mockingjay. Sorry, Jack. I feel the same way about what's the other one that did that? It wasn't that long ago. Maze Runner?
I think I only saw the first Maze Runner with Dylan O'Brien, right?
Lucky man, yeah. The first one was good. The others were pretty hard to get through. But I don't know. Something just rubs me the wrong way about the whole situation.
Okay, what about Dune Part One?
Dune Part 1. I was disgusted that it was just a part 1. I
But
That's
you
another
love Dune
movie.
Part. You love Dune.
I do. I love Dune Part 1. I hate Dune Part 2. Because Dune Part 2 establishes that once again, this is not just a part 2, this is part 3, part 4, part 5, part 6, because one is never enough of anything anymore. I think that Dune Part 1 could have been a great movie if it was just 3 hours long and they trimmed some of the fat. That said, Dune Part 1 is just an objectively more like beautifully shot movie. Like being in the theater for that and seeing those visuals were really cool to me. And I like you know that visual effects is something that, like, I actually do interest me in that sphere, in like the science fiction sphere.
Fair enough. What about Dead Reckoning?
Oh, dude, that's a good point.
Because they even backpedaled on the part one thing.
I was gonna say, dude, I mean, we'll get into it at Gladiator, but the Final Reckoning trailer is so fucking awesome.
Oh, I have so much to say. So, all right, before we jump. So, I know you're upset about part one. Are you going to give part two a crack when it's all out?
Nah, I'm not. I would rather just go see the musical. And honestly, I think part of my reason that I don't like musical movies is I just don't think that the two mediums crisscross well, like for me. I think that when I'm watching a movie musical, I always think like, oh, this would just be better on the stage. And when I'm like, I feel like these are two very different distinctive art forms, and part of the reason I love movies is because they take you to a different world where things still feel real. Like, even if you're in Star Wars, things feel real, even though you're fucking on a spaceship on a planet that obviously doesn't exist. You still feel like both the characters are real and the events that are happening are real, and all of that stuff. You can lose yourself in those movies. And the thing that musicals do for me, when everybody starts breaking out in song and then they just ignore that that like ever happened, it takes me out of that world really weirdly. And that's why I like when you're on the stage, I'm not in that world at all, and I can just kind of appreciate the things that you've pointed out for Wicked the movie here. And so I think that for me, I would much rather just see either a musical or a movie.
I think I would rather see the musical version of this, but now that I've seen the movie, I am engaged to see where it goes because I don't know the full story. I want to see how the Oz stuff unravels. I think I'm going to give Wicked 2 a shot. I think there's something here for me.
Do you have like any musical movies that you do like?
La La Land, High School Musical trilogy,
Did you grow up
School
with
of
those?
Rock, School of Rock.
School of Rock. Nice. La La Land is a great one, but and I tell this to everybody here, everybody who knows me knows my take on this. The last half of La La Land has like two musical numbers, and that's why the last half of La La Land is so much better than the first half. because you actually get to know the fucking characters a little bit more. Sing Street is the only, like, probably actual musical that I find myself going back to. But if you remember this, my big film theory thesis essay was on the new musical movie, which is the soundtrack film. So I think Waves is my favorite musical. I think it qualifies.
It doesn't, but I respect
44 the take. Songs. 44 okay, but songs.
It's not a musical, though.
But it's it is.
Not. The
but
character's got to be singing.
Read the essay. I promise. It's 40 pages long and it's great. you ready to jump to Gladiator 2 here?
Please. God.
Do you think a movie like Gladiator could ever win the Oscar for Best Picture anymore? Or has, like, the way the Academy views movies changed so much since 2000 that a movie like this could never win again?
I think it could, but there's a lot of layers here. It has to be directed by a fading great director like a Ridley Scott. Like, this is their final chance to get an Oscar doing a movie that they want to make. Like, not Scorsese, because he's already done it, but like a Scorsese Killers of the Flower Moon kind of thing. I think there is a world where, like, a grand epic historical piece could win. I just don't think it's going to happen anytime soon with the track record.
I think, yeah, like, maybe in 2050. I think we're pretty far removed. If Green Book is winning Best Picture, I think we are far past movies like Gladiator that actually, like, people see at the movie theater have a chance at winning here.
Do you think Gladiator 2 is going to win Best Picture this year?
No, I don't even think it gets a nom. Do you?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, thank God. When did you start getting hyped for this movie? This is something that, like, kind of interested me, because I feel like for the first, like, 6 months leading up to this, you were kind of like, eh. And then for the last, like, 3 weeks or so, you've been pretty, like, yeah, I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, the final trailer did it for me. I thought it did a really good job of hyping me up. The battles looked sick. That's what I was coming there for. And then knowing that Mezcal was going to be Lucius at first intrigued me. After seeing the movie, it ended up pissing me off. But Mezcal playing Maximus's son and getting some epic fight scenes, I was in for it.
Nice. Yeah, I was pretty hyped from the moment I saw Mezcal at the origin, I guess. I mean, this cast is pretty star-studded. And, I mean, we'll get into our thoughts here, but talk me through your theater experience first.
Interesting thoughts here, but I'll read away. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't entertained, but there was plenty to roll my eyes at throughout. Not to mention, such an annoying crowd tonight. We had a lady basically shouting every time Denzel appeared, and the family next to us was talking as if they were in the living room. Did not help one bit. Blast grade C-, movie grade B+. I think there is some great production value, and it does feel like an epic historical piece at times, but I was so frustrated as someone that loves the first Gladiator to see this movie leans so heavily on the first movie and almost lay a doo-doo on it at the same time. It felt gross. It felt unnecessary. It was hard to, like, 100% dive into this, but it was fun. I think that's all I can say about it. I had some fun.
So I actually texted you just this morning about how I was thinking about the Northmen the entire time I was watching this, with the revenge tale, the prince falling into slavery and then kind of, like, finding his way towards revenge, all that. But a new movie actually came to mind as a better comparison for this, and that's The Force Awakens. This is The Force Awakens for, like, Roman epics. And, I mean, you take all the same beats from the original, like, practically every single one. You undermine the sacrifice that made the original so good, in my opinion, is that ending was fucking awesome. And instead you undermine that to make more money. I mean, they're just playing the hits here.
Oh, it's bad. They basically want Mescal to be Maximus. Like, he's picking up the fucking gravel to strengthen honor. Like, it doesn't... They want to skip through all of the great character work and charisma that Crow had, and just they plop Mescal into this leadership role that he hasn't quite earned from the audience yet. I think the part that frustrates me with this legacy sequel is Ridley Scott directed it. Like, the man that brought us the original masterpiece is the one shitting on his own project. All right, so the Lucius thing is what drives me nuts. We see at the end of Gladiator, as Maximus is dying, he says, Lucius is safe. And then we cut to Gladiator 2, and he's immediately unsafe. Like, it undoes what the last movie was all about. Maximus trying to build a greater Rome. In the opening title crawl, it says Rome has fallen. Like, the Rome that Maximus wanted is gone. What the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, the same way that Darth Vader throwing Emperor Palpatine through the, force shaft or whatever the fuck that was, and saving and bringing balance to the Force just for everything to go to another empire. I mean, it feels like the same exact thing here.
Messy. And they kept, referencing it, too, in Gladiator 2. Every time they reference, your father... Maximus, I really respected your father. His name was Maximus. They're just begging the audience to get excited. Like, no, this one really does tie in. He's the next Maximus.
Just and it doesn't work at all.
No. Oh God. Oh God. So many eye rolls. Rough. Dude,
yeah, that dialogue was rough. Exactly what you're talking about. Just bringing up and. Part of the reason that Gladiator, the first one, works so well is because of the subtleties there. We're never explicitly told that Lucius is Maximus's child. You're left on your own to figure out, okay, Joaquin Phoenix is 1,000% gay in this. And instead, in this one, they just retroactively explain everything that was subtle in the first one. It drives me up the wall.
And again, it's the same guy that made the great masterpiece, but little tidbit, a little movie trivia for you. They did not really have a script for Gladiator when they started production. They had about 2 pages worth or something, and Crow helped Scott manufacture and create the script as they were going. So without Russell Crowe, could Ridley Scott have made Gladiator as good as he did?
That's wild. I did not know that. And honestly, I think what part of what goes wrong here is that in the first one, I mean, it takes probably a good hour and 10 minutes to really get into what this movie is going to be about. It takes a solid 70 minutes to just establish who Russell Crowe is as a character, set up the conflict and do all that. And it can be frustrating at times, but it really makes you root for him in those Gladiator scenes. Paul Mescal is a gladiator in this within 15 fucking minutes, dude.
It just rushes us to Rome. I will say, a concept that was really intriguing to me and literally got shot with 100 bow and arrows the second it got interesting was Pedro Pascal's character, Acacius, is essentially the Maximus of this story. He's the one that wants to build a better Rome and restore Rome to Maximus's vision. And Paul Mescal's character, Lucius, is trying to undermine that because he's so blinded by revenge, but then we never get the revenge. Lucius has this crazy 180. There's one moment where he's hating on his mom. He's like, get away from me. I'm going to kill Acacius. I've had enough. You abandoned me. And then the next scene, he embraces her. I'm never letting you go. He lets Acacius live. This movie's kind of all over the place.
On the battlefield, yeah. I mean, he's going at Acacius for his neck and all the stuff. He's trying his best to kill him. And then like you said before, Acacius just pulls out the, I would have died for your father. All right, bro. Well, you killed my fucking wife. Like, the 180 was insane. That also just, oh my God, it ruined the movie for me. I think that this is a better movie if either Acacius lives or if Lucius does take his revenge and then learn from that.
Yes. I think the movie goes downhill once Acacius does die. I think he was the most, and it's funny, I wasn't expecting it. Maybe my expectations for Pascal were so rock bottom, but I thought he was one of the shining stars of this movie outside of Denzel and the Emperors. I thought Joseph Quinn was really good as this unhinged lunatic emperor.
I thought Joseph Quinn was good, but I found myself comparing him to Joaquin Phoenix, and I don't think he is anywhere even close to Joaquin Phoenix, where he was in Gladiator 1.
Well, Joaquin Phoenix is just a masterclass actor. But the other thing, too, is that Commodus is built up in an established character. Like, he's a manufactured villain through great writing. They're Joseph Quinn and the other goober that's emperor, they're plopped in as emperor. You don't see how they come to power. And I think that's part of it too. Like, we don't get time to hate Joseph Quinn straight away, but we do get time to hate Denzel. He is an awesome villain here.
He is. He was by far the best part of this movie for me. And I think it's weird. I don't know if you've seen any of Ridley Scott's comments about what inspired Denzel, but that's something to probably get into after the pod. It's a weird way to say what he was trying to say. I think Denzel as a villain in this works great, but I don't think it is how Ridley Scott intended him to work.
You mean Denzel being the villain as a former slave looking to take revenge on Rome?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought Denzel as like a master manipulator. I mean, he kind of plays like a Zendaya and Challengers type of character in this. Like, he is really behind everything. He's almost like Palpatine in the first however many Star Wars is, where he is really just orchestrating every single thing that happens. And it was cool to see that from our perspective, knowing how hard he's manipulating these two fucking idiots. Because Joseph Quinn's twin in this movie is one of the most insufferable bad characters I have ever seen.
When he appointed his pet monkey as like chair counsel, the theater went nuts. That was awesome.
I can't believe this. Like, the entire time I was just feeling, this isn't Ridley Scott. Like, what the fuck happened here? This can't be Ridley Scott. And so that brings me to my question. Is this just a straight up cash grab? The answer is obviously yes.
You know, I hope that it is, because if it isn't, then Ridley Scott needs to have a sit down with his agent and his peers.
Gladiator 3 has already been announced.
Stop it.
Ridley Scott's already talking about his plans for it.
Oh, no. Does Lucius have a kid? Where do we go?
I don't think Paul Mescal comes back.
No way. No way. And I'm sure we're going to talk about this at some point, but does this movie kind of hurt Mescal as like a star, like in a big blockbuster movie?
I don't think so. And I let's just get into this now. I think that this movie does prove that Mescal can play an action lead. Like, he can pull that off, and I think he does a pretty good job of it. And I think this movie actually might strengthen him for people like Marvel, who are like, fuck, our writing sucks. We need somebody who can like actually elevate this. And I think he can still be that guy, because this proves he can work with actually anything.
See, where I struggle with this is that in a big blockbuster action movie, he isn't the best part of the movie. It's clearly Denzel Washington here. And I think you can make a case for the Emperor's being more magnetic from a performance perspective. And whether it's Mescal's fault or not, I felt like he is in the shadows of Russell Crowe and Maximus for 2 hours and 30 minutes here. And that kind of tarnishes, or I think for the next 2-3 years, we get a bunch of Mescal A24 projects and we don't get him in some big blockbuster like a Dune or the Batman.
I think that Paul Mescal's character in this is a side character. I think that Denzel is absolutely the main character. I think he even gets probably as much screen time as Mescal does. And for that reason, I think that this is his Tenet if he's Robert Pattinson.
I think this is closer to like Goblet of Fire. I don't think we're quite there for Mescal. I really don't think so.
Well, time will tell, but I think we can both agree that eventually he will get there.
If he wants to. Maybe after this he's like, holy shit, I need to do another All of Us Strangers.
Yeah. I mean, oh man.
What about Denzel, though? Like, is this the end for him? I know he's greenlit for Black Panther 3 now, but this kind of feels like his farewell tour.
He's only 74. And I'm just going to throw this out there. I think that this is his Hannibal Lecter performance that can open up the door to another side of Denzel Washington performances.
How so? Because I feel like he's played a notorious, insufferable villain 100 times before. Like, this is Denzel being Denzel like he has been for the last 30 years.
What movies is he a villain in? I always think of him as the protagonist.
Training Day, American Gangster.
I mean, those are like 40 years ago.
Okay, so let's think here. Man on Fire, Safe House. I mean, he's been the Equalizer for 10 years. I think we're leaning into a little bit of recency bias.
Yeah, maybe so.
My point is he's returning to form. Like, I felt the Equalizer was the end of Denzel. It was going to be like Russell Crowe. Let me just make a bunch of dollars and then hang it up. I think with Gladiator 2 and this awesome performance, I think there's a pocket where he goes for one last like Oscar chase.
Interesting. I'll be interested to see how that plays out, because honestly, I envision another 20 years of Denzel Washington performances.
I hope we get 20 more years. It doesn't seem like he's interested in that. I think he said he's only got like 3-4 projects left in him, and one of them is Black Panther 3, only because Ryan Coogler is directing it, and he That's wants cool. to help his buddy out.
I wonder, like, do you think then he goes on for a couple of other directors and does great movies? Like, is Denzel in who's another great, like, only 2 or 3 movie people?
What would you mean 2 or 3 people?
Like 2 or 3 movies they've made. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, is there any other growing directors who Denzel would want to add his image to, like, their name?
I mean, Jordan Peele is the only name that comes to mind. Fair. Still on the rise. I mean, we've only seen 3 movies. But I could also see him getting attached to this new Christopher Nolan project that's coming out. I wouldn't be surprised.
Nice. What about Pedro? Where's What's next for Pedro?
I don't know, but probably another, like, 6-7 movies for next year. The guy's everywhere. And honestly, I liked him in Gladiator 2. He was one of my favorite parts, and that was a big surprise to me. So if Fantastic Four is a hit, we're going to see a lot more of Pedro Pascal for years to come.
I think we are going to see Pedro Pascal for approximately 3 more years until the TikTok people who brought this guy to stardom forget about him. And he inevitably just fades into, like, Tony Todd levels of stardom for the rest of his life.
Well, it kind of depends on Fantastic Four. If that sucks or the MCU completely falls flat on his face, I think that's it. Because we're only getting one more The Last of Us season with him, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And Fantastic Four seems like his Hail Mary play. If that's a hit, I mean, he's going to be around. I mean, look, Chris Evans, yeah, he hasn't had any hits outside of Knives Out, but he's been around. Yeah, Red One on IMAX. See it on IMAX.
Oh, my God. I don't know, man. What about Joseph Quinn?
Scorching hot. Another guy that's going to be in Fantastic Four. He was in A Quiet Place day one. He seems to be popping up. Everyone seems to like him. Stranger Things 4, he was Eddie. I think we're going to get a lot of Joseph Quinn for, again, another 3-4 years.
I think Joseph Quinn's 2000s comp is Taylor Lautner. I think he's going to fall off the face of the earth in like 2 or 3 years. I really don't think that Joseph Quinn has it. I saw flashes in this movie, but I don't think he gave a great performance. I think he gave a good performance, but not great, not amazing. Like a solid 6.5 out of 10. And one of the greatest directors of all time can only bring that out of him, I don't think that he's around for years and years and years.
All right, well, we did just talk about how shitty the dialogue was in this movie. That's point one. Point two, I don't think Taylor Lautner gave north of a 6 out of 10 performance in his entire career. So, insane comp. He was just hot.
Abduction?
Watch that in my car. Driving on like a family vacation. It was on like the minivan, like mini TV. Sucked. Poor.
I'd argue Sharkboy and Lava Girl. He gives 9 out of 10 his best performances.
Yeah, but he gets outclassed by George Lopez there. So
good
it's
call.
A scratch.
Good call. What are your choices for like the biggest cash grab sequels of all time?
Oh, Jurassic World Dominion immediately comes to mind. That movie sucked, and they brought back the whole original cast. Ghostbusters Afterlife, I didn't even see that one. I mean, why did they do that? This one, Gladiator 2, honestly is on my list only because it's just begging you to be reminded of the past. And then two MCU projects come to mind. Love and Thunder, and you'll love this one, Black Panther 2, your favorite.
Yes!
Yeah, it feels a little gross, you know, a couple of years after. Yikes.
Oh, man. That made my day. Nice. All right, my short list here. I think Halloween Ends is a total cash grab. I mean, you can make a case for the whole trilogy. I guess 2018 was probably the movie that DGG wanted to make, and then the rest were just cash grabs. Joker 2, I can't believe didn't make your list. That's pretty bad. Conjuring 3, Indy 5, and 4, honestly. Dial of Destiny and Crystal Skull were both just awful cash grabs. And then my last one is the Jumanji reboots.
those are gross. Gross. I saw some kid on TikTok. He made a slideshow of his top 10 movies of all time. Both of the new Jumanjis were on his list.
He had to be kidding.
The comments went insane.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. So we've talked a lot about Ridley Scott today being one of the greatest directors of all time, right? I mean, I think we can both agree he is, at the very least, one of the most influential. Do you think he should be in the conversation, at least? Maybe not in the top five of all time, but do you think he should be in the conversation for the top five directors of all time?
Yeah. I mean, he's got to be in the conversation. Is he in my top five? No, he is not. He's probably fringe 10, and even that feels like it's pushing it. But like off the top of my head, Kubrick, Fincher, Nolan, Villeneuve, Hitchcock, Spielberg, Zemeckis, maybe James Wan, Ridley Scott, maybe.
Bro has TikTok Scorsese. Brain. Come on. Nolan really. And Villeneuve, like top five. I think that's crazy.
Okay, well, I've been making a Villeneuve over Nolan case for like 5 years, so it's not that crazy for me.
Fair.
Dude, Villeneuve's like 7 for 7. Like, and I know Scott's got like basically 20, 30 years on this guy, but he's made some stinkers the last like 2 years. Napoleon and Gladiator 2 are so poopy.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to give you my top 10 here. And it's because I wrote out 5 and I was like, damn, that's not enough. My number 10 is Dario Argento. 9, I have Villeneuve. Number 8, Nolan. Number 7, my boy, John Carpenter, of course. I have Scott at number 6. And then I have Spike Lee at 5. Hayao, I can't even say his name. Miyazaki, the guy who made all the Studio Ghibli movies. I have him at 4. Wong Kar-wai at 3. Stanley Kubrick at 2. And Fincher at 1. I do think Fincher is the best to ever do it. Something sad, though, that I noticed while making this list, and that I noticed while you were listing yours off, is not a single woman. And yeah. I was thinking through, like, Sofia Coppola, Greta Gerwig, Nancy Myers, I think can all be in the top 10 conversation after, like, 1, 2, maybe 3 more movies. But, man, it's tough to look back and really realize, like, how how bad it really was in Hollywood, how bad it still is.
Yeah, I think if you give it another 5 years, Gerwig could crack the top 10.
She but has
even
to.
Then. Yeah, the disparity here is laughable.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even it's bad. So you think Ridley Scott's washed though with Napoleon and Gladiator?
All right, I'm not sure washed is the right way to look at this. There's two avenues for Ridley Scott here. It's either he's washed and fell off the cliff, or he's just in a rough patch. Because if you look at the three movies prior, before Napoleon and Gladiator 2, you had Prometheus, a movie we both love, Alien Covenant, one I'm not big on, but can I identify, it's pretty solid. I think you like Covenant.
I do.
And The Last Duel, everyone that saw it seemed to like it, just no one went and saw it because of COVID. So I want to say that he's got one more good movie in his back pocket.
I guess my thing is, like, I'm looking at this filmography and Prometheus feels like something new, but the rest feel like movies that probably belong in the 70s, 80s, maybe even 90s. Like, I don't know. I don't think Ridley Scott is washed, but I think that he is, I guess, just part of an era that has kind of faded away from movies. Like, I think Napoleon, if you go back to 1977, you're looking at Barry Lyndon being like one of the best movies of the year. I can't remember if it's actually 77. Don't crucify me here. And that's like one of Kubrick's, in my opinion, it's one of Kubrick's best movies ever made. And like we look at Napoleon, that's, they are very comparable. It's just Napoleon came out fucking 50 years later. So he's in this weird spot, I think, in my mind, where he's not making movies that are for today's era. He's making movies that he probably wished he would have made in the 70s or 80s, but he couldn't have. And so maybe these are all passion projects. I think Gladiator 2 is a cash grab, and maybe that's to finance future passion projects. But at the very least, it's an interesting place to be.
It's tough for these old guys. Like, I don't think Scorsese's washed, and I think that's kind of hurting Scott's stock right now.
But Spielberg is, right? Can we agree on that?
Spielberg is washed.
Yeah.
I didn't see here, but is Zemeckis washed?
I mean, has he made anything since like the animated Beowulf?
So washed.
Yeah, I thought the guy was just retired. I don't know. Like, you look at these guys who historically are great, great, great directors. Like, I know I'm a bigger Carpenter guy than you. And like, always at the end of their careers, they're making movies that are for themselves, and you can tell. And maybe that's just what Ridley Scott is doing here. But I mean, do we need Gladiator 3? No. Is he going to make it? Absolutely. So maybe this is hurting his case, but he still belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Fair enough. I agree. He deserves to be in the Hall.
Nice. Do you have anything else to say about Gladiator 2? I mean, it seriously just ruined my day when I saw it, because Ridley Scott is just a guy I respect so much for always doing what he wants to do. Like, Covenant, you can say what you want about him selling out and stuff like that, but I could still feel the Ridley Scott in that movie, and it worked really well for me. I don't know all about the studio interference, but I think that movie just worked for me. Last Duel is a movie that was made for nobody. Like I think of Ridley Scott as an artist, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And this movie made me very sad to see him sink to this level.
I see. Yeah, I get that. And I guess the only thing I have to say is if you've seen the first Gladiator, I feel like you should hold off on this one. If you haven't seen the first Gladiator, you might get something out of this one. I think the frustrations with Gladiator 2 all stem from past, like frustrations with callbacks to the past.
But do you have to see Gladiator 1 to understand what the hell is going on in Gladiator 2?
Not really, because we get like legitimate grayed out flashbacks of Gladiator 1 here.
Oh man. Did you enjoy the callback to the hand flowing through the field?
I thought they were gonna show Crow. That would have been bad. That would have been bad.
They should have just started playing clips from Unhinged, that one where he's just got road rage.
Then it would have been good.
Yeah. There we go. Poke some fun at yourself. Goddamn. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to this episode of Blast Podcast. Be sure to check out our website and download the Blast app. You can go to www.blastmovies.net or search Blast Movie app on the App Store. Also, stay tuned on our YouTube. Search up Blast Movies or just follow the link in the description. Same goes for TikTok, blast.movies, and Instagram, blast_movies_. A lot of content on there, and we are hoping that you guys are enjoying it. It sure seems like it. So we will catch you next week with an episode on what's surely not a sellout movie at all, the epitome of originality, Moana 2.